Hello and welcome from the Chelsea Flower Show, where for five heady days in May, the grounds of the Royal Hospital here in the heart of London become the hub of the horticultural world, with stylish show gardens, both bijou and bold, transforming the landscape, and wonderful imaginative displays of plants grown to the peak of perfection inside in the Great Pavilion. I'm here with Reg Maxwell, himself a gold medal winner at Chelsea, to talk to some of the designers and growers who are showcasing their skills and their expertise. And among them are a team of floral artists from Northern Ireland whose work is on show in the Great Pavilion for the first time. We're looking forward to catching up with them later on and to walking and talking fabulous plants and stunning gardens. So, as it's been for the past 100 years, at this time in May, it's all about flair, style and excellence. It's the Chelsea Flower Show. Well, I'm absolutely delighted to say that we're with Mr. Alan Titchmarsh, the voice, the face of gardening. Alan, how wonderful. We're in a garden that's of your very own making.
It's lovely. Well, I'm really enjoying being in it, which I suppose it's a good job, isn't it, really? It's been lovely. It's called From the Moors to the Sea. It celebrates 50 years of Britain in bloom, and my 50 years in horticulture, which began on the moors and our garden by the sea. So it sort of encapsulates the whole thing, really.
You set yourself a real challenge with this, though. We're standing in your beautiful beach house, summer house, which we all want to move into.
I think covetous eyes cast at this.
Indeed.
It's beautifully sort of painted in this kind of soft, very, very soft grey and cream, and it's wonderfully cool. And I'm quite enjoying, actually, in this weather, standing in the shade inside
very
it.
Very hot today, yeah. But behind you, that wall of stone. Mm. I mean, getting those boulders selected
We've
and in place.
We've got boulders there that are 12 tonnes, you know, some really, it's the kind of wall, as you say, of enormous great boulders, and on top of them is this thread of dry stone wall which runs right from the bottom of the garden diagonally right up to the top right hand corner, and it ties it all together. And on this side we've got the seaside, if you like, and on the top side the moors, and the moors does hit the sea, you know, down in Cornwall, for instance. You get sort of heather and moorland stuff going right the way down to the cliffs. So I was unsure how comfortably they'd sit together, and they sit together perfectly well.
But I think the scale of it is there, because having the big stones, you give the drama, but also the scale in the design is there. You know, you can't work with small things.
And it's a big problem avoiding being fussy and having dramatic impact, and they've given us that, I think. Yeah. And the sheet of water, the same, and this sort of apron of sand that goes round it. It's rather like a full stop at the end of a sentence. It allows you to breathe. And I think in a lot of gardens, there's a danger that they're too busy and there's just too much going on. And the better gardens, like the better gardens here, I think, have these sort of bits of oases of calm where you can get your breath back.
You're marking anniversaries with this garden, aren't you? 50 years in horticulture, 50 years of Britain in bloom for the RHS, and a drive to encourage young people into gardening with a kind of a rebooted drive, if you like, this year. We had the painted little gnomes last year. This year, wonderful drawings available to buy online from designers like Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen and Paul Smith. Something I know you would, I would guess you feel very strongly about.
We've been working so hard to raise awareness, to wake people up to the fact that this isn't just a career for people who can't do anything else. It caters for all degrees of academic and practical ability. And practical gardeners are so valuable, but also so are designers, so are research scientists that we need. It's such a broad church, horticulture, that I wish careers officers would, you know, and advisors would take that on board. And also that every parent get their child out, just getting out and dirty from being tiny. Let them play out in the garden, let them make a mess, let them get filthy, let them build up some antibodies. You know, never mind killing 99% of household germs, you need to build up your resistance. Go and eat some soil. I shall get in trouble for that. But we need to make sure that children are connected with the earth. They naturally love it, and if they grow up with an affinity with it, they will be the better custodians of the landscape as they grow older, and they'll enjoy it too.
I think that's important, though, the apprentice scheme for gardeners, because it's the craftsman gardeners that deliver everything in the end. You can have the best design, but if you don't look after it, you don't have a garden.
We need growers, we need people who take pleasure and delight in growing plants and who will learn the skills of growing.
We're with David Rich, who, alongside his brother Harry, has designed this beautiful garden called Vital Earth, the Night Sky Garden. There is a challenge you set yourselves.
Yeah, definitely. It was the biggest challenge, obviously, displaying kind of a night sky theme in broad daylight. But I think we've managed to pull it off, just.
You were here last year. We so loved there was a little avenue of smaller gardens. They were all very soft, very kind of rural, very, we all recognised elements of them wherever we came from in the British Isles, I'm quite sure. This year you've got a larger space and a larger brief, really.
Yeah, so we moved up from artisan to doing a show garden. I think it works out about six times bigger, so six times the stress. but no, it's a lovely step up, and it's nice to be able to show more things off. We're able to kind of incorporate a building in there, more seating, more materials, so it's wonderful.
And it's a garden for daytime. Obviously night is the theme that you've chosen, but it's obviously a garden for both.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, there are the night sky elements. So you've got a kind of stargazing bowl at the back. Throughout the theme there, the boulders represent meteors and things like that. But we also wanted to represent a beautiful garden within the day. So you can walk through it in the day and not even, you know, notice that it's a night sky garden.
You've tried to bring in some very natural feel, though, with the birch and some of, like, the wildflower, the theme in it, and the foxgloves, the spiky plants.
Yeah.
What was the thinking behind this?
So the thinking behind our planting was we wanted to try and echo the feeling of the Milky Way. So we wanted to kind of immerse people amongst the stars, in a sense, but also keep it really natural, kind of to do with our local Welsh landscape, you know, feel like you are kind of walking through like a secret garden or this little patch of a woodland, you know. Predominantly white plants, white flowering, but with tones of maybe oranges and blues and purples, just to kind of pick up those colours throughout.
Very softly planted, and lots of things which the average garden, if you allow yourself a little bit of wildness, you could enjoy.
Well, I mean, what's so great and what we really like doing is showing achievable planting for this time of year. So we haven't brought anything on or held anything back. This is what's flowering now. You can have all this combination in your garden. Pick plants that predominantly flower in this month. But if you want this month to be, you know, your opportune time in the garden, this will be perfect for you.
White foxgloves, Queen Anne's lace or cow parsley, whichever you prefer.
Yeah,
to
cow parsley.
Call it.
Yeah, all natural plants, quite a lot of grasses throughout, and just loads of things that, you know, keep quite a lot of movement and quite a loose planting style, really. So our sponsor for the garden is Bord Nimona. It's called Vital Earth Night Sky Garden, and Vital Earth is their UK company. So we've worked with them to produce this garden.
So you're Welsh boys, and they're obviously Irish, so it's a good Celtic theme running through.
As long as it's not English, we're happy.
We're with Hugo Bug, and beside Hugo's gorgeous garden. Tell us, though, what the theme of your garden is.
Oh, the RBC Waterscape Garden is a garden which actually just manages stormwater. It just replicates nature. It's quite simple. It just slows stormwater down. The idea is that keeps that water in their own home and makes it filter back into the groundwater like it would do in nature.
Talk us through your plant list, Hugo. You have lovely, you've tiny Alcamilla mollis, which most of us will recognise. You've got the iris, you've got very pretty Astrantia, but you've got dashes of carmine, kind of scarlet, and plants I don't recognise.
Yeah, so the whole garden's under like a canopy of alders, sort of native alder trees, and then we've obviously got the osmanthus domes, we've got the crimson colour of the cerium, the thistle, and also of the Lismachia, Beaujolais, which is a really lovely Lismachia, which flowers for quite a long time. You've got the very dark, actually, Angelica ebony, which really set off, and then obviously you've talked about the Astrantia, the white giant Astrantia, and then obviously the really structural Juncus grasses amongst the... We've got two different irises. So in the wetter areas, it's the Iris Robusta Gerald Darby with a lovely purple stem, and then on the sides into the Iris Sibirica, Perry's Blue.
There's nothing like the sound of industry, and by golly, there's plenty of industry happening in here. We're in the Grant Pavilion, and we're with some very busy and very important ladies to us, Anne Traynor and Mary Pearson from the Northern Ireland Group of Flower Arrangement Societies. Reg Maxwell is here too, and girls, I hate interrupting you in the throes of this. You've been executing this giant and wonderful creation in the middle of the Grant Pavilion. Tell us why you're here and what it's all about.
It's the Emerald Anniversary of Nuffus, and because we come from the Emerald Isle, obvious connection, we have been chosen to represent the national organisation.
How did you come up with the brief? Where did you get your idea from, Anne?
Initially, we had to put forward a title that couldn't be changed, so we thought we would stay in the line of the Emerald theme. and we came up with the title of A Green Thought in a Green Shade, which is a line from the poem The Garden by Andrew Marvel. We've gone to Northern Ireland National Trust properties and had a look for inspiration, and we finally decided on Mount Stuart. There was so much to offer there that we felt we could use to stage an exhibit that would be translated into flower arranging. To achieve our height, we thought the columns that they have in Mount Stuart would be very appropriate. And as you can see here, we have got a column going up to 18 feet, including the finial on the top. And we also, steps feature quite a lot in Mount Stuart, and we tried to repeat the steps in front of the main house. You can see here we have steps to the front and the back of the design.
I must say the plant pattern that you've chosen, the colours are absolutely exquisite. There's a lot of green, as you might expect, and there are particularly two plants with a connection with Northern Ireland, as you might expect.
Yes, we have our hosta, Reverend Mac, which was used to fundraise. It was to celebrate his birthday and then to raise funds for coming to Chelsea. We've used it in the arrangements and also as plants. And then we've other plant material that we've been privileged to collect from the gardens, from Mount Stuart and from Rowallan as well. We have some lovely plant material from there, including the Holguelia vine from Rowallan, and some lovely Anchianthus campanulatus as well.
There's lots of connections, but I think I like the way the colours have been used, and the blues coming out above it. It reminds me of the Mary Garden. But there's some very spiky plants like the foxtail lily and things like that, as well as your roses and the regular plants. There's some greens and colour, it contrasts well.
But I do love the way you've married the formality of the roses with the softer greens on it. And you've used quite a lot of foliage material too, haven't you?
Yes, garden foliage is very important to flower arrangers. We've brought some foliage from our own gardens, and that's used as a backdrop to all the lovely flowers that we have.
Gloria Honeyford, how lovely to doorstep you at Chelsea.
I know, I bump into the nicest people here, so thank you very much. Lovely to see you.
You're here for pleasure or for work?
Absolute pleasure. I mean, I adore coming to Chelsea and indeed Hampton Court.
What have you seen today at her so far that you've loved?
I want to go and see my pal Alan Titchmarsh's garden, but we're by this wonderful garden here to the left, which is stunning, I think, because it's a combination of modern and traditional. And that's what I think is so clever. I have a very traditional garden at home, and when I look at the wildness in Chelsea, I like to think, well, that's what I'm aiming for. The truth of the matter is, it's just wild. But they seem to have this wildness all around. I mean, everywhere I look at the moment, it's an amalgam of just like wild flowers just growing everywhere. And how they put all of this in such a short period of time and make it look like it's been here for years, it's beyond me. But it's beautiful, really, really beautiful.
Reg is with us, Reg Maxwell, and he's a past master at doing this, having won gold at Chelsea himself too.
Have
so
you
he
really?
Knows about the stresses and strains, don't you?
Fantastic.
Well, yes, that's one thing, but I think the art is just selecting your plants and knowing how to look after them. So I think that if you're reinterpreting this for yourself, you've really got to be very careful on plant selection and then plant maintenance.
Well, I think that's where I go wrong, because I don't really plan anything. If I see a plant, and I'm quite knowledgeable, my father taught me about plants. I won't know the big Latin names, but I know the common names. But I don't plan it. I'll see something that I like, and so I bring it home and I stick it in, as opposed to planning.
As we all do.
I guess we do. But I love the garden, really love it. But I wanted to ask you a question, because today is a very hot day. It's going to be 25, 26 degrees. Is that a chore in trying to keep the plants alive for Chelsea?
It is indeed, especially for the ones in the Great Marquee, because there the heat builds up, and of course a lot of them are cut flowers or plants that have been in ideal conditions. So yes, it's a great challenge, and a few headaches will be had by some people.
Yeah, you can't win, because when it's very cold and raining, that's bad too, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
At least this is good for those of us who are walking around. It looks beautiful.
We're with Andrew Wilson and Gavin McWilliam, who have designed this wonderful, most interesting, contemplative, contemporary garden. Behind you, Andrew, wooden walls that create wonderful shadows and shapes, and they're quite imposing, but at the same time, very restful in some strange way.
I think it's the timber. I mean, they're huge. We've got the main pavilion behind us, which is 6 metres high. So we thought we'd try and hide that, and I think we've maybe done a good job of that. So these timbers are 4.5 metres high, quite sort of monumental. But I think the softness of the charring and the breaks through the apertures that let the light through and the light and shade. We were talking the other day, Gavin and I, about this painting with light and shadow. And I think that's what brings the softness in. But also the planting alongside and in front of it starts to soften the whole thing.
Reg, the planting is absolutely beautiful. Everywhere you look, there's something to catch your eye, and the palette of colours is very subtle but vivid at the same time.
Yes, I like the way that that purple, that wine colour has gone through. It really is quite striking because it's a bit different to what we've seen in the rest of Chelsea. Blue seems to be a dominant colour, but here we seem to have got a subtleness in it, and the contrast with the greens just brings the whole thing out. It's restful, and yet it's strong, and I think that's what is a key feature.
The reds and the whites picking out the wine, which of course you're invited to quaff in this garden. I can't think of anything more civilised.
We're looking forward to that moment, I think, which is coming very soon.
Yeah.
But the tasting notes of the various wines, we've got Pinot Noir colours, we've got colours for Chardonnay and for Sauvignon Blanc. That was the sort of theme of the garden in both the hard elements and in the planting. And that's what's allowed us to really explore those incredible colours and the colour changes. We like the relationships between them as they flow together.
You've got foxgloves, you've got grasses, you've got Solomon's seal, ferns, you've got strawberries, you've got roses, which were being greatly admired by people passing a little earlier.
Yeah, scented roses as well, which is great. So in the back section with the wilder planting, we've got gooseberries, raspberries and strawberry. But some of the flowers that are, you know, native and just pop up through the grasses are kind of repeated in the more ornamental varieties at the front, so that there's this little conversation going on. If you look closely enough, you see these little views, little glimpses of things that you might think are familiar.
What roses did you choose, Gavin?
We've got Gertrude Jekyll there, we've got Munstead Wood, Burgundy Ice and Jude the Obscure. So I think just following on from what Andrew said there, there's a richness and a texture and depth both in the soft landscaping and also in the hard landscaping. We've used limestone, English limestone, and used the offcuts from the limestone to give a textured face to the walls, which also carries on through the rill. And that's something that we're very interested in, taking the overlooked and making it a focal point or something interesting, something beautiful. And I think we're both rather delighted that I think we have created something beautiful.
The woodland part of Chelsea has only relatively been released for exhibition and to have us gardens in, and these are the artisan gardens, and the first one you come to, of course, the Vikings have arrived with their boat, and the garden has got that in it, and then it's a great variety of frothy flowers, the anthriscus and things like that, and also iris coming in, and euchre is at the bottom to give colour, so it's quite vibrant in that.
And I love the way they've used the upturned boat, the hull as the seat, with a slate path with little tiny infinity pools with tiny little pumps pumping water delicately, and runic symbols carved on the stones that you walk on through the gravel.
It's marvellous that, and it can be interpreted and it can be put into your own garden so easy that all the simple elements are there to go on. And then we move on to the potter's garden. And the potter's garden is really, it's got a little brick kiln and then a shed with all the pots and wheels for turning the clay and things in. But here we've got much more colour, right through from purples to blues to greens to the lovely alliums and things. So it's a garden that you can use for the springtime of the year, this choice of plants, just with the foxgloves showing, and they're a bit later. So when doing a garden, you've always got to think, what's in season?
Also, though, Reg, this garden, before we move on, has got particular significance this year when we're remembering the First World War, because I think the theme behind this, too, is that the potter left to go to the front. So at the border, at the front of this garden, are sandbags, which would have lined the trenches, of course, and they're loosely planted with little erigeron daisies and with thyme from this distance, it seems to me. It very much feels as if he's just stepped out. Even the shelves in the shed, with its lovely tiled roof, even the shelves dip. There's a little dip in the shelf from the weight of all the clay pots and jars. And there's a shell. There are empty, spent shells and cartridges, and as well, carved board with famous lines from poetry and thoughts written around the time of the First World War.
I think that's the sadness of it, and of course that's what they're doing this year, 100 years after all, of the start of the First World War and 70 years since the finish of the last, since the D-Day landings of the last war.
Very pleased to be able to be reading one of the best known of Wilfred Owen, great war poet's poems, Anthem for Doomed Youth. What passing bells for those who die as cattle? Only the monstrous anger of the guns, only the stuttering rifle's rapid rattle can patter out their hasty orisons. No mockeries now for them, no prayers nor bells, nor any voice of mourning save the choirs, the shrill, demented choirs of whistling shells and bugles calling for them from sad shires. What candles may be held to speed them all? Not in the hands of boys, but in their eyes shall shine the holy glimmers of goodbyes. The pallor of girls' brows shall be their pall, their flowers the tenderness of patient minds, and each slow dusk a drawing down of blinds.
The pipes and the poetry of the First World War. And now a word with the designer of the No Man's Land Garden, Charlotte Rowe.
Well, it is a conceptual landscape based on the idea that land, where it's churned up and fought over again and again and again, as the Western Front was, the No Man's Land, for 4 years, over the same land, trees denuded, soil, topsoil lifted, a huge great big tunnel holes left, it can recover and regenerate. And so it's really about the healing of the land as a metaphor for the human spirit and the human body, and that's why I'm tying in with the Soldiers' Charity, because it's all about things coming back and recovering.
How did you create this wonderful hill to our left, which is sprinkled with poppies? It has a little gentle spiral, which you can just make out underneath the grasses, and a path which looks as if somebody just walked up there. Mm-hmm. Areas of symmetry, if you like, with clipped yew, it seems to me, at the back mm-hmm. there. But it's wild and it's very welcoming and it's very atmospheric.
Well, we physically did it by actually making an earth mound, and then we brought in some wonderful grassland mix, and we had to plug in a lot of other plants as well to make it look really natural. It was extremely difficult to do because it's surrounded by undulations which signify the old trenches that have been left scarring the land. So trying to plant into a slope in a show garden is very difficult. We think we've made it quite successfully natural looking. The taxus, the yew globes, are there for two reasons really. A, to give some structure and form and to reflect the undulations which surround them, but also as a symbolic reason, because Gertrude Jekyll, who did the original planting designs for the Imperial War Graves Cemetery Commission when they first started putting the war graves in back in, you know, 100 years ago, or just under 100 years ago, and she used yew in a lot of the cemeteries. So I was just reverting back to that really.
And it's very restful. And I think that's probably the objective, that after war, after all that disturbance, peace can be restored.
This is the first of two Japanese gardens in this artisan gardens walk, with lovely ceramic work reflecting the work of Japanese Imari porcelain. You have maples, of course, you have other soft planting, you have lovely little tiny, very vibrant little asters, you have a birch tree, and you have bamboo, of course, at the back.
Yeah, and the cornice looks well, doesn't it, on the left-hand side there with its bracts just coming in. And then this is the beauty about the artisan gardens, because you get a small spaces maximised with quite some effects. And of course this is the tour of Yorkshire Garden, which have got the back wall is stone but with lots of bicycle wheels in the horizontal position, and then in front of it is a magnificent viburnum plicata. And the one plant that's coming through regularly in gardens this year, of course, is the aquilegia, and this is the blue one along with the iris. Blues and purples seem to be a colour that's regular in all the gardens this year, along with the frothy white things like anthriscus and stuff. But blues and purples are in.
And of course, with the Tour de France
coming to Yorkshire this year, this very contemporary garden is kind of setting out that stall proudly, isn't it? All those elements of Yorkshire and the bicycle rims really skillfully woven into the lovely kind of creamy sandstone wall, just saying welcome to everybody.
This is a garden that you can rest in after you've had a good bicycle ride.
Up and down all those hills and dales. Now we've come to the next garden on the walkway, which celebrates 75 years of the roof gardens in Kensington. It harkens back to gardening and a gardening style of another time. It's almost like a little temple, really. There are columns, there are two upright pines, there are red, rouge red terracotta almost, rendered walls at the back, quite roughly rendered, a bit of texture there. And again, a ceramic pool at its core, which looks nearly Moorish, and the waterfall is copper. It's a completely artificial copper, but it's based on maple, I think the shape of the leaf is. Very pretty.
I think the hard landscape there, you know, as you say, is Moorish in design. But I like the plants in it, because you've got geums in it, you've got poppies in it, you've got the verbascum, that lovely orangey type flower, verbascum, but a beautiful geranium madeiriense, which is just absolutely in full bloom and strong. One of the gems in this series of gardens is the Paradise on Earth. This is a Japanese garden which has maximised this small space. It's full of elements that are peaceful and restful and yet not overcrowded. You've got a lovely little tea room with a little tokonoma in there, with the walls a window of water running down. You've got lovely curved steps of pebbles that twist through it to a gateway, which is an arch, which is covered in mosses, a variety of mosses all stuck to it. And then looking through that, you can see the water feature. There's a cascade, there's a water wheel, and I wouldn't have thought a water wheel would have worked, but here it works beautifully. You've got movement, you've got sound, you've got light, you've got shadows, and you've got these trained conifers balanced like little umbrellas, and then you've got the aces. And of course, one thing, it's a little gem that's been hand pruned, is a pieris, which was one of the number one plants in the RHS in the 1930s. Cherry?
Very familiar to all our gardens now, the forest flame, the pieris. Yeah. This garden is called Tokenkyo. It's very useful to have the thinking behind the garden written for everybody to understand a little more, perhaps. And it says it was designed to capture the fable of Tokenkyo. I'm sure that's not the way it's pronounced. A place of beautiful scenery that can help people forget their troubles and strife, but once visited, can never be revisited. There's mysticism for you.
Isn't there? I could walk in, sit and relax and go into that little tea house and sit in there and read a book or just snooze and be at peace. There's definitely a peace in it. It's, although it's full of plants and full of movement and design, it is still very restful.
I see trees that are green, red roses too. I watch them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful
One of the lovely things about coming to any show, of course, is the likelihood that you'll bump into someone you know. And as we were strolling through the Grand Pavilion, who did we chance upon but Brian Duncan, well known to many people in Northern Ireland for his wonderful work breeding daffodils, and a long-time judge and member of the RHS. And you've been coming here, Brian, you were telling me, for quite some years.
Yeah, something like, I don't quite remember, but certainly 30 years, and I enjoy it every year. And of course, every year the president says that this is the best Chelsea ever. And this year, I think that might well be true, because it's, I think, even more colourful than ever. There's some magnificent exhibits.
It's lovely to see you. You're here wearing your judging hat. What are you looking at particularly?
Well, we'll be looking at the bulbous plant exhibits and also the alpine and rock garden plants.
Not sparing Brian's blushes, Reg, but his reputation as a daffodil breeder goes far beyond our shores.
Indeed it does. I think it's world renowned, and it's surprising what has come out of Northern Ireland, the amount of varieties and the scale of the varieties, the differences in the blooms. So yes, Northern Ireland and Brian Duncan, daffodils, the three are one.
They are indeed.
Maybe I can just say it at this point that this year I celebrate 50 years breeding daffodils. I started in 1964, and also I'm suddenly an octogenarian, and I've had my most successful year ever in daffodils. So I'm delighted.
Lovely to see you. Enjoy this Chelsea, as we are indeed. And thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm in the Grand Pavilion, surrounded by scent and colour and all manner of beautiful things. And I'm with Chris Blom from Blom's Bulbs. And your display is stunning, Chris. But you brought me over to a bucket in the corner, The Verge, here to show me your favourites. Now, we're surrounded by showy, bright blooms. But you've just unwrapped... Oh, they're beautiful. They're alabaster, like a marble, cold marble, and tinged with a soft lavendery purple. Why do you particularly love these?
I love them because of the heritage of them and the colour and the innocence of them. I think modern-day varieties can be somewhat inbred, but these just go back to yesteryear, and that's my beauty with them. And I think... when you look at tulips, they're always cheerful, they're always happy, and people have special favourites. Just so happens the old heritage ones are my favourites.
Share some of your secrets, would you, with us all, about growing tulips well?
Tulips like rich soils. You plant them 4 inches deep. I love tall Mayflowering tulips. Probably one of my favourites... is the Avignon. It's Mayflowered, it's long-lasting, corally pink, most majestic of all tulips.
You have it planted en masse here in a fantastic, enormous cast-iron water butt. Looks like it would take 10 men to let the water out.
It does.
Chris, thanks very much indeed. Thank you.
My pleasure.
It's often said, Reg, isn't it? And it's always true that the beating heart of Chelsea lies in the Great Pavilion, where all the growers display their skills and their handiwork. And we just thought it'd be nice to actually have a quick walk around and see which plants jump out at us as saying particularly Chelsea. And daffodils now over for all of us in our gardens at home. But look at this wall of daffodils dressed against a cobalt blue backdrop, and displayed a la Chelsea perfection.
It is the art of preparing the flowers and looking after them until you get them here, and then arranging them, and arranging them that you can see, because the judges will be wanting to look at the full face of the plant or flower. And then, of course, with daffodils, I mean, the season's gone, and we're in this heat, 20-odd plus degrees, and yet the coolness of them against the blue, it makes you feel cooler as well.
Well, it's lovely to bump into Christine Walkton, and we're here admiring the daffodils and marvelling at how they look this fresh in May.
They're absolutely amazing.
Stunning, completely stunning.
Well, you don't quite expect to see daffs at Chelsea.
You do not, and anybody who thinks daffodils are only golden yellow, come and look at this.
Well, you know, bicolours, oranges, whites, creams, you know, they're all there now, aren't they? So there's something for everything, and I think that's what's nice about Chelsea, because you come expecting the predictable, but you're also going to find the unpredictable. And, you know, that's a whacking great stand with a lot of interesting plants on. And there's a daff there for every single person.
What do you want to take home with you?
I am still the old-fashioned, classic yellow daff man.
Wordsworth, that daffodil.
Well, it is. And for me, you know, they're beautiful. But there is something exquisitely elegant about a plain yellow, simple trumpet daffodil.
They're harbingers of spring, aren't they?
Not quite. You know, and it's great to see all this colour, but for me, and it's the same with most of the plant species, not just narcissus, it's the same with the dahlias, it's the same with roses, you know. The original one, generally, is the best.
You'll be having a busy Chelsea, I'm quite sure. What have you enjoyed so far from what you've seen?
Well, the alpine stands are beautiful, and I love Peter Rabbit's herb garden. I just, that took me back to being a kid in my little allotment, and, you know, lovely story, lovely execution, and it's just a dream garden. Yet very simple, very small, but actually very nice.
And as we walk down past the vibrant poinsettias on this big stand representing the First World War, we meet the major stand in here, which is the Hilliers stand at the monument. And this is a huge stand that you can walk through with trees 20 feet high or 30 feet high, flowering cherries, viburnums, lots of small shrubs underneath. And then beneath them you've got the herbaceous plants, the foxgloves and so. But it's this layering that's so classical in gardening. You know, you've got the three-dimensional space fully used, but every piece comes into its own through its season. So the deciduous stuff come into leaf and flower, the bulbs come, they fill the little gaps, then the herbaceous plants take on in this late spring, early summer and through. So you've got full seasonality. And on this stand, you can find something for every space in your garden.
It truly is breathtaking, the Hilliers stand. You were telling me that they are always here, and the monument at its heart is a permanent monument which stands here in the grounds of the Royal Hospital Chelsea, with its glinting gold obelisk at the top, with the names of real people who fought and who died, and the whole monument softened by the planting which has been brought in.
And then you, moving round, you go into the blues of the ceanothus and the blue foliage of acacias. There's a wall of hornbeam, and then that breaks before you go into the next phase where you've got tall cercidiphyllums, tall conifers, the smoke bush, and lots of herbaceous material underneath that. So then further still round, you've got a more like a rockery area with saxifrages, lovely stone features and pines. And behind that, these lovely rhododendrons and azaleas. Azaleas that have been grown up on spikes, so the flower head is like a lollipop at the top. And amongst it, a little feature of what we call labels that are done in all shapes, shapes of leaves, even shapes of a cross.
Now this says to me Chelsea at its absolute peak of perfection.
It is. The standard of the plants, the vibrance of the colour, the fullness of the display. You've got the ground floor, and then above them you've got dominant plants, the statement plants, and look at that lovely white of the cornice called rainbow. So delicate and yet so strong in its statement.
We've stepped back into the Great Pavilion and we're with David Austin Jr. and we're kind of embalmed by scent and loveliness. I'm not getting too carried away with myself, but the roses in here, David, as you know, are exquisite.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's been a good growing season. Not too cold, so that the roses have grown more naturally. And when you have to heat the roses, because they're about 4 weeks earlier than we would normally get, the petal on the rose will tend to shorten. So if you can get a more natural growing season, you get more fuller flowers, better quality. So it's been a good year.
Your growing conditions must be highly effective and vigorous, though, to keep the plants looking as robust as they are.
We have our own special greenhouse. It's full-time. It's there all year round. Nothing else happens but Chelsea roses. They go in January. We have different climate areas, as we call them, so that we can move them around to different temperature zones just to get them all to the peak of perfection for Chelsea.
What about what you put in the ground? Because that's the secret, isn't it?
If you're talking about general gardening, soil preparation is obviously one of the important things, but you know, if you get organic matter, horse manure, cow manure, that is a great thing. But what we try and say is don't let anything put you off, because the rose is actually a very, very robust plant. And, you know, with no knowledge, just have a go, you know, and you'll be amazed at how well they will grow. If you're then moving on to really become a more expert gardener, then obviously you can do more to get more from your roses.
I think also today you've got a much bigger choice. I mean, right from shrub roses to carpet roses, to, as well as your hybrid tea, or the old hybrid teas and floribunda terms, and climbers. You can do so many things with them, can't you?
Absolutely. I mean, that is one of the big attractions of roses, is that the diversity of types. They offer a gardener from the tiniest miniature to a 40-foot climber that will grow through trees. You know, they're an incredible plant, yeah.
And they're also useful to be mixed planting. I mean, with herbaceous plants and some other small shrubs, you can create such a variety of colours, because the roses are such a wide colour range.
You touched on mixing with herbaceous plants. I don't think there's anything more beautiful than a mixed border. They really do go well with the cottage garden plants, particularly, again, the more graceful shrubby roses.
The more you give them, the more they give you.
Absolutely. That's it. Yeah, exactly that.
It's always hard to leave Chelsea, isn't it, Reg? And we have to leave. What, though, are the vivid impressions that you will take away with you from Chelsea this year?
I think it is the gardens. I think the colour palette. It was good to see the blues going through to the purples. That was really dominant on the stands, and it was so well balanced. But I can never forget the Hilliers stand at the monument. There you've got every plant you can think of. 150 years they've been bringing different plants into this part of the world, and the vibrance of them and the variety of them is always breathtaking.
Thank you, Reg, indeed, and absolutely. And on that note, we take our leave of you here from the 2014 Chelsea Flower Show.